You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Made it to a Thursday. It's hour one, Dan and the Danettes. Dan Patrick Show. Glad to have you on board. Stay a while if you can. A lot of topics to dive into. We'll talk to the Hall of Famer Johnny Bench a little bit later on. We'll talk to Chris Mannix. He covers the NBA for Sports Illustrated. Sean Salisbury, he is a talk show host in Houston, former NFL quarterback, on the possibility of the Texans trading J.J. Watt. Yes, Paulie.
Excuse me?
Yes. Sorry to break the news to you, but the Houston Chronicle is saying maybe that's what the Texans should be doing. Will Fuller is a wide receiver that you might be able to trade him, and the Green Bay Packers reportedly are interested in him. If I'm the Texans, I would trade J.J. Watt. Depending on what I can I get a first-round draft pick for J.J. Watt? And if I can, I'm going to trade J.J. Watt. Bill O'Brien's not there any longer. And I think you got to decide, are you trying to reload or rebuild? And I think coming into this season, we thought that they were reloading. This is a mess, though. This is a mess going forward with the Texans. Salary cap issues. They don't have draft picks. But I could see J.J. Watt. You could send him to Seattle, Green Bay. Maybe have him with his brother in Pittsburgh. Yes.
That was my wild card.
Yeah, sure, why not? But we'll talk to Sean Salisbury about that. And the Rockets got a new head coach. He's Steve Silas, Paul Silas' son. And I don't know what kind of system he's going to bring in there, but I don't think he can bring in a system. I think he's basically got to say, James Harden and Russell Westbrook, let's run it back. And that's what's going to happen there. We'll talk to Mannix about Daryl Morey, who left Houston, and he was the architect of that Rockets roster. Now he's in Philadelphia, and I think everybody's under the assumption now the 76ers are going to be playing like the Houston Rockets. Daryl Morey's a bright guy. I don't think he's going to go, let's bring Rockets ball to Philadelphia. I don't know what the plan is with Doc Rivers, but he'll have a plan to be able to incorporate Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. You at least give it 1 year. They have some big salary cap issues there with Al Horford, Tobias Harris, but can you make it work? And what will that roster look like? What will their playing style look like? So Mannix will join us coming up a little bit later on. And Johnny Bench, one of my boyhood idols, is selling all of his memorabilia. And we wanted to talk to him about that. And he'll join us coming up in the final hour of the program. Got some news about Justin Turner and what kind of punishment for him from a source last night. Got some information about Nebraska football. I'll have that for you coming up here in a moment. If you'd like to get in touch with the program, you can, 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address, dp@danpatrick.com. Twitter handle at dpshow. Say good morning to those watching on Peacock. We appreciate your patronage. And also those listening on our 360, I lost track. Is it 367 radio affiliates around the country?
Sure.
All right. And of course, the formidable Fox Sports Radio lineup. Poll question, play of the day, stat of the day, all of that forthcoming. And we talked about this yesterday. I'd gotten word at 10:10 Eastern time yesterday morning that the Wisconsin-Nebraska game was in jeopardy and that Graham Mertz, the starting quarterback for Wisconsin, had tested positive. And my source said that it's likely that he had tested positive prior to the game and had been around everybody in team activities during the week. And you had a couple other quarterbacks who had tested one other quarterback tested positive, and then you found out that the head coach had tested positive, and now I think there's a bigger concern. My source told me last night, I'll give you the information, that Nebraska wanted to schedule a non-conference game this week. When they got the news yesterday, Nebraska was actively canvassing college football to see if they could get somebody to come to Lincoln to play a football game. As of now, have not heard anything, but that's what my source said. Also, my source said the 21-day isolation in the Big Ten was an overreaction to myocarditis, and they did this when there wasn't any data known. My source says, I can't imagine the Wisconsin-Purdue game next week will be played. Now, there is a report that debunks the cardiac concerns. And that Wisconsin is saying, I believe Wisconsin is saying that, you know, this 21-day window before players can come back from a positive virus test, that that testing may not be needed for many. And that they're going to try to limit the number of days that you have to sit out. Because if you're out 21 days, and let's say you lose 30 players, that's half your season, basically. It's three games that you're going to have to sit out. And then your coach is going to have to sit out. And Wisconsin may have put the entire Big Ten season in jeopardy here. Because if you're not going to be able to play, this really comes down to, we thought Wisconsin was an outlier maybe for playing in the Final Four. We know Ohio State has the talent to play in the Final Four. You have to have enough games here. And if you're only going to play seven, and then you're going to have the championship weekend where everybody plays, now I'm going to take away one game, two games. I take away three games. Now I'm down to five games. And now you're just going through the motions. You know, the Pac-12 hasn't even started yet. It's not starting this week. The Pac-12 doesn't start until the following week here. And that's basically a cash grab. Let's just go out, get some money, you know, try to get some, you know, money from our TV partners here, because nobody's going to be playing for anything in the Pac-12 except for a hollow Pac-12 championship. But that's the information I have. Nebraska, as of yesterday morning when they found out, started calling to see if they could get somebody to come to Lincoln to play. Yes, McLovin.
So Wednesday, how do you game prep for a brand new opponent on Saturday? That seems crazy.
This whole season is crazy. Yeah, see.
But like, do they really expect there just to be a team sitting around right now that's like, oh yeah, we'll play?
If Army was available, Army would play. I don't know if Army has a game this weekend, but it feels like Army would be there, BYU would be there, Arkansas State. Like, it feels like there's like six teams that play, you know, at least twice a week. Yes, Paul.
Army's got the weekend off. They just housed Mercer, and they're getting ready to take the take down Air Force in 2 weeks. Army's got the weekend off. We can call them up.
Yeah, maybe.
Grease the skids a little bit, Dan.
Yeah, well.
How about North Dakota State?
Ooh.
They got that almost like exemption where they played one game, so they're able to have full practices. North Dakota State, I don't know if Nebraska would want them to come down.
Yeah, be careful what you ask for. Like, Wisconsin was coming to town. Now, all of a sudden, you're like, we can't get them. Let's get North Dakota State. But I don't know how any of this works. This is just what my source told me. That now Wisconsin is trying to, I don't know if they're petitioning the Big Ten, but I think that they're trying to talk to the medical experts in the Big Ten and, you know, try to debate this or debunk this or maybe not have it as a 21-day window. It's not, you know, based off of COVID, but this condition due to COVID, and they don't think that there's enough data there. But that's some of the stuff that's going on right now. And in many ways, Big Ten football is a microcosm of the uncertain situation surrounding COVID and really every sport. You have a sound policy today, and then that makes no sense tomorrow. First, you cancel the season. And then, in part because of political pressure, you bring it back. Not everybody was on board. And by the time the season rolled around, the numbers were getting worse in some of these states. And Wisconsin, Nebraska canceled for this weekend. I'm assuming the Badgers are going to have a hard time playing against Purdue the following week. But hopefully what happened in Wisconsin is isolated. But, you know, the strict guidelines make returning to play really complicated here. And there's no easy answers. I don't have any answers. I just deal in reality. Colleges, they don't have the flexibility that the pro sports leagues do. They can't take off 4 months and come back. Students are there. They move on too quickly. None of this is going to be easy, especially for the Big Ten, whose inconsistency could end up hurting their chances of competing completing the 2020 season. And we brought this up at the beginning. When the Big Ten announced that they were canceling, I just wanted to know, how aggressive were you at exploring all options? Because you could build in bye weeks, safeguard weeks, where if something happened, then you had an opportunity to regroup. And you don't have that because you waited, you waited, you waited, and then there was political pressure, and then you decided to come back. Not everybody was on board. We didn't know that there were going to be hot states that are getting hotter and students coming back. You know, you can't bubble. And that's the big difference. In college, you can't bubble. Baseball, you can. Basketball, you can. Hockey, you can. But with college football, you can't. And it's not a matter of if, but when you have an outbreak here. And we've seen it, you know, sort of sporadically. But the Big Ten is just starting. And if you have some of these hot states, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Ohio, it's not a question of if, but when and how many. But that's the information I have so far with what's going on with Wisconsin and also what Nebraska was trying to do. And I don't think you can schedule a game today and have it played on Saturday. I'm thinking that they thought if they could get somebody yesterday, then maybe you could give them a couple of days to prepare for you. And even if you had a Saturday night game where you gave them a little extra time, they could travel on Saturday to get into Lincoln. But I don't know where that stands. And I'll check, you know, with my source this morning and see if there's any more information with them. All right, McLovin, you got a poll question today.
Okay, for hour one, how about we put up that J.J. Watt question that you asked? What's a bigger question? Would you take a first-round pick for J.J. Watt if you're Houston, or would you give up a first-round pick for J.J. Watt if you're the teams you mentioned, Green Bay, somebody like that?
I need to know how healthy he is. If you say that he's healthy as a, what, 32-year-old? Is he 31 or 32? If you say he's healthy at that age, then yes, I'd give up a first-round pick. You know, if I'm a team like Green Bay, somebody who needs help, you know, Seattle just picked up Carlos Dunlap. Now, he's an edge rusher. You could always use another one. I mean, that's probably the worst pass defense in the NFL. And if you can bring him in there and he's going to help you, you have to be a team that's on the verge of winning. And this is one of those where if I'm Kansas City, I'd go, I'm going to blow everybody out of the water. Like, I'm taking no prisoners here. We're going to ensure that we're going back to the Super Bowl. And I want to keep him from, you know, one of our opponents here. And if I give up a first-round pick for him, I get J.J. for maybe 2 years. All right. I got a chance to win Super Bowls. And that's what Kansas City said. That, and I don't know if Kansas City's interested in him. And I thought about the Cowboys, but the Cowboys are such a mess that it doesn't make sense to bring him in unless you say, well, and Jerry likes shiny things. And you take him from the Texans. I got Captain America on America's team. But that's not going to help that team. You know, they're so inefficient on offense that J.J. Watt is not going to help them. But if you said, hey, I can put him on the Steelers, Seattle, Green Bay, Kansas City, I'd be all in with that. And if I only have to give up a first-round draft pick, yeah, I'd do that. Yeah, Paul.
You know, as much as Packers fans may want to bring Watt back there, I don't know if that works for that team. But they used a first-round pick on a quarterback who's not playing anytime soon. The second-round pick on a running back who's third string now. They didn't draft a wide receiver. And if they trade draft capital for a non-wide receiver right now, I don't know how that's going to play.
But if he helps your defense, you know, their wide receivers appear to be a lot better than people are giving credit for.
Put Watt back at tight end. Ooh, like the old days.
Yeah.
Full circle.
Yeah. I mean, he was at, what, Central Michigan? Yes, McLovin.
I mean, it does seem like they sort of redeem themselves for the wide receiver thing because they have, like, the best passing, most efficient passing attack. Pittsburgh seems like they kill the quarterback already. Do they need to – would J.J. Watt even help them? I don't even – No,
well, they lost Bush for the season.
Yeah.
He's a linebacker, but I don't know. I'm just throwing teams out. Reunite, you know, J.J. with his brother, T.J., who's there.
Also, all these teams would be like the end of the first round. It's not like a high first-round pick. It's like really a second-round pick.
Yes. But if I'm Seattle, then I would certainly roll the dice on something like this. You know, is Jamal Adams, how injured is he?
I'm not sure.
Because Dunlap's a good pickup for Seattle. He wanted out of Cincinnati, and that's a good pickup for them. But they need a lot of help because that secondary, that pass defense is really, really bad. Of all the contenders, it's not even close where Seattle is and what they give up with all the other teams that we consider Super Bowl contenders. Yeah, McLovin.
Jamal Adams could be back as early as this week. Okay. So that's not long term.
Okay. This program brought to you by Traeger. Expand your recipe playbook, the 6-in-1 versatility of a Traeger wood pellet grill. Right now, get free shipping when you enter the promo code Dan at checkout. Head to TraegerGrills.com/DP show to start shopping or check out one at a dealer near you. What other poll questions do you have?
Okay, I have an NFL one that we can save about which underdogs have the best shot this weekend.
Okay. The Jets were 21-point underdogs.
They were not on the poll. as a team most likely to win the game.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's, now it's down to 19.5?
I heard that it was bet down to 19.5. Which is, I guess, the biggest Jets-Patriots spread since Randy Moss was in New England.
But no, this isn't Jets-Patriots.
Oh, the biggest Jets underdog spread.
Yeah.
But there have been bigger spreads. 2013 Broncos-Jags was bigger than this. So it's not the biggest spread ever, but it's pretty big.
But was the Broncos-Jags spread, was that the biggest ever? Was that like 26.5?
Yeah, something? That's what I'm seeing. That was the biggest spread that, on record. 28-point home favorites.
Oh, and the Jags covered.
Yeah, they beat them by 16.
Yeah. Broncos won by 16.
Can't you see the Chiefs just getting ugly with the Jets and keeping that within 20?
Oh, you mean the game is ugly?
I mean, like the Chiefs. Yeah, I mean, remember the Chiefs-Patriots game? They sort of ran the ball. The Chiefs have shown that they're not going to go aerial every game. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it feels like there's a little bit of a difference here. You're going against Bill Belichick, and it's ugly, and you're going against Adam Gase. That doesn't seem fair. Feels like Belichick could come up with something different, which he did, and probably could have won that game if he had Cam in there. We've yet to see the Chiefs play at their best, which is kind of scary, but we haven't. And, you know, Patrick Mahomes, we've gotten almost numb to the fact that he's so good that you forget how, you know, we talk about Aaron Rodgers' start, Tom Brady's start, Russell Wilson's start, and then look at the numbers with Patrick Mahomes. Like, it's just a casual greatness that's there. And his numbers are, they in a like, normally you'd go, wow, that's a great start to the season. Yeah, McLovin.
16 touchdowns, one interception.
Yeah, but we don't talk about him like that. You know, we fawn all over Brady and Rodgers and Russell Wilson Jr. III, and then Mahomes is like, I don't know, we're winning, and I got thrown one pick and 16 touchdowns. Yes, Todd.
And you get spoiled with them, even when they get a touchdown. If they don't do it like in 3 or 4 minutes, yeah, you start wondering, why did it take like 6-7 minutes for them to get in the end zone?
Yes, Paulie.
It's interesting, though. Mahomes 2 years ago threw 50 touchdowns. Last year, 26. If you prorate it, he was injured 2 games. It would have been 30. He's on pace for 31 this year.
Yeah.
They're not crazy numbers. They're not out-of-hand numbers.
But they're efficient numbers.
Totally.
Russell Wilson is having a season where he could put up, you know, 50, 45 touchdowns.
I did it. He's on pace for 58, I believe.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, or something
okay. Crazy.
Yeah. I'll have to double-check that. I'm not an analytics guy.
All right, we'll settle on a poll question here, but we'll talk some NBA. They're trying to start the season around Christmas because it's so valuable financially for the NBA, and the players do not want to start Christmas time. Plus, if LeBron doesn't want to show up for if LeBron's not coming down your chimney on Christmas, then they're not playing on Christmas. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Sean Salisbury, morning host of the Sean Salisbury Show on Sports Talk 790 in Houston, the former NFL quarterback, kind enough to join us. All right, Sean. Should they consider trading him?
Yeah, well, first off, Dan, I got a voice like Fergie and Jesus. Okay, let's and I don't have a flannel shirt on. It's good to be on. I think they should, Dan. Here's what I think fan bases and people need to get over is that loyalty thing, right? Oh, my gosh, we can't let the guy who is fabulous in the community, 3-time defensive player of the year. But then you start to say, because I can promise you in Houston, considering what Bill O'Brien left the franchise assets-wise and the way they're paying them and they're 1-6, because they are who they are. JJ's never winning a Super Bowl here. And he's 31. And with the injury background, now he is still a hell of a player. The problem is every year that goes by, the value starts to diminish. So if you're a team like, let's say, Pittsburgh, Seattle went and got Dunlap, or the 49ers without Bose, and you say, we're close. We're a player or two away, and especially in a league that doesn't play much defense, J.J. Watt can help. So what do you get? You're desperate. Maybe you give up a second rounder. You're never going to get a first, But, Dan, next year it's going to be a fourth-rounder or a fifth-rounder. We just don't give assets away. So I would. The Texans are going to have to rebuild. They're going to get rid of a lot of these guys in the offseason. They're trying to find a general manager and a coach. I would do it as hard as it is for people to say, oh, my gosh, J.J., this, you can't do that. When J.J. retires and goes into the Hall of Fame, he'll come back a Texan, right? You can and you should. This team has no assets, no draft picks in the first couple rounds. It's time, and J.J. Watt, outside of Deshaun Watson and Tunsil, you're not trading, is your biggest value, or maybe Will Fuller. It has to happen, but I don't think it's going to, Dan.
Why?
Because they're afraid to death of the owner, first of all, is not heavily involved. I don't think Jack Easterby really, I mean, really wants to be involved. And by the time the deadline is going to pass, by the time a general manager and head coach are, and I think they're so PR conscious about it and their loyalty that I think the PR hit for them, they think, would be too big. The truth of the matter is, if they want to do the right thing, most fans in this town, once they got over the initial shock, would say it's about time. And if you could milk a second rounder, I don't think they have to. And Dan, there may be some buzz nationally, but you know, there is minimal, if no buzz here locally. I've tried to create some. It ain't working very good, I promise you.
Yeah, I just look at this and say, you know, we're not going anywhere. Agreed. What if J.J. quietly, privately said, look, if you want to trade me, don't worry. You don't have fans in the stands, Sean, so the hit you're going to take is not going to be seen. It's not a visual. They're not showing up for football games here. Maybe the local ratings might not be great, but if I'm the Texans, I got to start thinking the next 5 years, not next week or the next year. And I think Will Fuller, if Green Bay is willing to give you anything for him, thank you, Will, some nice parting gifts, absolutely.
Dan, I'm 100% with you, 100%, because you look at this, you got to, you know, everybody begs for a franchise quarterback, right? You got him, but you're going to waste him.
Yeah.
Because no matter, and he's one of the top, you know, he's putting up yards and average yards per attempt. Look what it's getting them. They beat Jacksonville. Now look at the other side. Even with J.J. Watt out there, as Bill Belichick always said, I can take your best player away on defense. So what are they doing? You double him. They couldn't stop me, you, or Katie High School on a Friday night from running the ball against them. So if that's the case, let's start to get assets and rebuild and learn now. You got a franchise quarterback, and I'm with you. Somebody, Will Fuller is going to ask for a lot of money next year, Dan. And they're already so invested money-wise at the wide receiver position, and they're 1-6. I can find rookies to go 1-6. He's going to want, what, $15, $16, $17 million? No. Go get an asset, trade him for a second or a third-round pick, and keep it moving. Son, we got to move on. And if you want to build a franchise, there's no reason to wait, because this team, I can't even visualize where they're going in the next 3 or 4 years with no assets. I know one thing. I got a left tackle and a quarterback. That ain't doing me any good. I can win one game with me at quarterback.
But I also wonder, if I'm Eric Bieniemy, the offensive coordinator with the Chiefs, he's going to have an opportunity to take his pick probably. Let's say the Jets are open. I don't know if Jacksonville's going to be open. Atlanta's open. The Texans is open. You know, that situation's open. If I'm Eric Bieniemy, you start to look at the inventory you have here with what's the future, what's my salary cap, what kind of draft picks, who do I have? I don't know if Eric Bieniemy goes, boy, Texans, that's the place I want to go.
Yeah, and then you start to look at Atlanta too, right, Dan? I mean, that's a situation. You're exactly right. The one thing that drives you to the Texans is the number four, right? You say number four. Then you say, well, the front office, how committed are they? What's the general manager? What's his longevity here?
But if how I much go power to the Jets or Jacksonville, I may have Trevor Lawrence, and I'd rather have Trevor Lawrence than Deshaun Watson.
Dan, I posed the question yesterday on my show. Would you trade Trevor Lawrence straight up for Deshaun Watson? The Jets wouldn't. The Texans should, right? But it's not going to happen. That's a foregone conclusion. So, yeah, if I'm Eric Bieniemy, while it seems like, well, the best quarterback of all the guys you named is Deshaun Watson. But if you go to the Jets, it's a team. There's no expectations right off the bat. You go get Trevor Lawrence, and maybe Trevor Lawrence makes that a free agent destination as well, and you have far more assets. And he's a generational type player. Watson maybe as well, but I'm with you. I don't think it's the lead dog anymore, considering the situation here. Although Bieniemy's going to get a job, I'm not sure that Houston will be the first one on the list now.
He's Sean Salisbury. You can hear him on Sports Talk 790 in Houston, the Sean Salisbury Show. While we're talking about trading iconic figures here, would the Rockets consider trading James Harden? I don't think they could trade Russell Westbrook, but would they consider trading James Harden?
been a huge topic now with Steven Silas, named the head coach, Dan, on my show this morning, of why not? If you're going to go and just get there, right? Because they're not winning an NBA title with the roster, how it's constructed and the small ball, and they don't have – think about the lack of draft picks, the Astros with the problems with the sign stealing, the Rockets who've gotten rid of all – they don't have any assets coming in, and the Texans. Dan, we ain't got a draft pick till 2040, okay? Grandkids are going to be playing by then. So they won't. Dan, he's got more power. I think James loves being powerful. And he is powerful in this organization. And once he walks out the door, what assets are you going to get for him that are going to help you win, to get to a championship? Because he goes out, his value is not going to get what you, what, four first-round picks? Where are they going to be picked? Is it the Knicks? Who's he going to? And they love him here. And you say, well, are you going to get an offensive player? Would nobody trade? It's like quarterbacks. Rarely do you trade a superstar that can score for you. And whether it's teams coming here or James going out, he's not going anywhere right now either. Even with Daryl Morey out of the building and on his way to Philly and a new head coach coming in, they're going to build it around James Harden. They're going to win 50 games. They're going to get to the playoffs and they're going to be eliminated. I would consider it. If you're going to rebuild, let's go now. But with that salary and with the love of this city and his offensive performance, James Harden is not going anywhere. Although that's another one that they should consider.
Great to talk to you as always, Sean. You got a couple of topics there to dive into on your show, certainly.
Yep, absolutely. Why are you smirking? I got a lot of topics.
I'm not smirking.
I am. I am going to dive into all of them, but thank you. It's great to be on your show.
Now I'm smirking.
Always appreciate it.
Now I'm smirking.
Yes, you are. There you go. I appreciate it, Dan. Thanks,
Thank you, buddy. That's Sean Salisbury, morning host of the Sean Salisbury Show on Sports Talk 790 Houston, former NFL quarterback. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Chris Mannix joining us and senior NBA writer for Sports Illustrated. Let me start with the schedule, Mannix, and the importance of the NBA coming back and playing these games on Christmas Day. What do you think?
I mean, the NBA understands that at least for the first quarter of 2021, it's highly unlikely that we see fans in the stadium. So to maximize their revenue, it's as simple as maximizing their games. And by starting the season during Christmas week, you can squeeze in a 72-game schedule that ends sometime in late June. And that's equally important, Dan, to this process as well. I mean, you know, Adam Silver has said this to me, said this to others, but like they want to get out next year before the start of the scheduled Olympics. They don't want to be playing deep into the summer and competing with, you know, swimming and track and field and things that people watch during an Olympic cycle. They want to be out of normal time so they can reset their calendar going into the 2021-2022 season. So by starting in late December, they can get as many games as possible. They can fulfill their regional sports contracts, which is important, maximize those national contracts, and at least generate as much revenue as they possibly can.
Yeah, but the players' union is going to push back on this.
Yeah, the players' union has pushed back on this, will push back on this. I mean, Michelle Roberts, her comments this week to The Athletic are in line with everything she said to other reporters, including me. I mean, I spoke to her, you know, back in August and asked her about this specific question, knowing the NBA would probably want to get back at some point in December. And she said to me that 2020 just didn't feel like a realistic possibility. And now here you are, you know, a couple of months before a penciled in start date. And Michelle Roberts is saying the exact same things. Now, understand, Dan, there are probably half the teams in the league that are going to be ready to go. You had eight teams that didn't go to the bubble that have effectively been off since March. You've got another half dozen teams that were done in mid-August. I mean, there are teams out there that are ready for that start, but you can't underestimate the power of one team and the power of one player. And that's the Lakers and LeBron James in this process. I mean, I talked to a player just last night and he told me, he's like, if LeBron doesn't want to play, we're not playing. So it probably isn't as simple as that, but LeBron James will have a big influence in this process.
Explain to me what the 76ers are going to look like when they take the floor this upcoming season. Now that you bring in Doc Rivers, you got Daryl Morey in there as well. What kind of style? And will we have the same lineup on the floor?
Oh, I mean, that's the question, right? I mean, I think the biggest question you have now is, what does this mean for Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons? Now, before Daryl Morey was hired, it was almost a mortal lock that you would see Simmons and Embiid back with this team together. It's probably likely that you see Simmons and Embiid back to start next season, but Daryl Morey is a freewheeling general manager who has not been afraid in the past to shake up his roster and make significant moves. And he's a general manager that bases a lot of his philosophies on analytics. And texting with other GMs, they kind of said the same thing to me. They were like, well, I wonder what this means for Embiid and Simmons. Will Daryl look to move one of those guys to create a more modern NBA? Like, Embiid is great. Simmons, despite the fact that he can't shoot, is a great player, but they don't necessarily fit the modern NBA. Embiid's a low post presence. Simmons, a non-three-point shooter. I think it's going to bear watching in the next, you know, month, 2 months, you know, how Daryl Morey views this roster and if he thinks that Embiid and Simmons can play together.
But also you have Steven Silas taking over in Houston. So no Morey, no D'Antoni. And what's that mean for the style of the Houston Rockets?
Well, first and foremost, Steven Silas is an excellent coach. Like, he has been effectively a coach in waiting for the better part of the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, he was considered strongly for that Houston job back in 2016 before Mike D'Antoni was hired for it. He's been considered strongly for another handful of jobs since then. He's got a great background. If you go back all the way to his early days, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson were two players that worked really well with him back in Golden State. So all that being said, the Rockets are an almost impossible coaching job at this point. I don't think their style of play changes simply because it can't. Like, they're not going to go out there and suddenly have salary cap space. They're not going to be able to significantly alter their front court to add another big man. I think Steven Silas is going to have his own twist on some things. But in Houston, barring a substantial deal involving James Harden, I don't believe you can change the way they play significantly enough to make a difference.
He's Chris Mannix, Sports Illustrated NBA senior writer. I'm looking at the Clippers. There was a little chatter about maybe Chris Paul coming back. Rajon Rondo with the Clippers. What kind of moves can the Clippers make to counter what's going to be an extremely strong West again next season?
Yeah, I mean, they're extremely limited in what they can do. They don't have the draft capital to make a trade. They don't really have the assets in general, whether it's young players or otherwise, to make a deal. What they do have are some of these salary exceptions, and you can throw an exception at a Rajon Rondo. And Rondo, look, his stock hasn't been this high since he left Boston. It's as simple as that. I mean, the way he played in the playoffs, proving once again he's on a championship level, the Clippers could certainly use something like that. When Patrick Beverley went down in the playoffs, they were really missing something at that position, and Rondo can bring something to that slot. So I think you're going to see in Los Angeles with the Clippers some nibbling around the fringes a little bit. You'll see maybe a Rondo added or another big man added, but I still think it's more likely than not that the Clippers dig deep into their pocketbook, bring back, you know, some of the players they have as free agents, whether it's Montrezl Harrell or Marcus Morris or Jamichael Green, and try to run this thing back. That's kind of the message, Dan, they were sending when they brought in Ty Lue. I mean, Ty Lue is an excellent coach, but he's also a coach that can establish continuity, that can help that team hit the ground running whenever next season starts. So I think they bring this band largely back together.
I couldn't help but think when LeBron was celebrating the title, the confetti is coming down, that he was immediately thinking, who can I get on this roster? Like, what do we add? And, you know, there was talk about Chris Paul, that can you bring in Chris Paul? Do you need Chris Paul if LeBron just had an incredible season as your point guard? What do the Lakers add or subtract?
Well, I don't know that there's much room for them to add or subtract anything either, for largely the same reasons that, you know, the Clippers have. But the Lakers are in a slightly different position in that in the summer of 2021, they could have some pretty significant salary cap flexibility. They could make some moves where I believe they'll be right around $30 million in available cap space, depending on what they do with some of these contracts this offseason. So their goal to make a significant change probably lies in the summer of 2021. The Chris Paul stuff, you got to remember, Chris Paul makes like, you know, $75 million or whatever it is. Like he has one of the biggest contracts in the
That's
NBA.
That's an exaggeration, stuff. Chris. That's an exaggeration.
Perhaps. Okay. Perhaps it's a little okay. bit over the top. Right. But if you're acquiring Chris Paul, you've got to basically, you know, gut your team or deal a big name player and really be willing to roll the dice. That's why a team like Milwaukee still looms, I think, as the strongest candidate to extract Chris Paul from Oklahoma City, which I believe is going to happen.
Yeah, they could use him more than anybody. And if they had Chris Paul this past season, I think it would have been different. I think he would have meant that much to them.
And Dan, you can make it work in Milwaukee. You can put together a combination of Eric Bledsoe, George Hill. You can sweeten the pot with a Dante DiVincenzo or a draft pick. You can make an appealing offer to a team like Oklahoma City. And if you're the Bucks, it's a no-brainer. I mean, worst case scenario, you know, Giannis leaves after next season, you're stuck with one extra year of a big contract with Chris Paul. After the 21-22 season, you would wipe the books basically clean to start from scratch. So there is no easier move or more of a no-brainer move to make than Chris Paul going to Milwaukee.
Before I let you go, I know you're not married, but you fall in love a lot when it comes to the NBA draft. Have you fallen in love with somebody?
A little bit. This is getting recorded. I'm a big James Wiseman guy. Big James Wiseman guy. I don't know what to compare him to. I see a little bit of like David Robinson's game in him from back in the day. He's a hyper-athletic 7'1" guy who I think if he is drafted by Golden State with the number 2 pick in the draft, he's going to be a player there for a long time. And he's going to be effective for that team almost immediately. I think whether it's a trade or Anthony Edwards, that's probably the number 1 pick. But Golden State sitting there at number 2, if they don't make a deal, I think James Wiseman's their guy. And I think he's one of, not the best player in this draft.
Yes, McLovin.
Chris, I know you've been in the bubble for a while. Have you been there since 1988? Have you noticed that centers don't matter anymore?
Athletic centers who can run the floor. Look, James Wiseman played for Penny Hardaway down in Memphis. And I was talking to Penny about this recently. You know, Penny used to show Wiseman all these tapes of Shaq, and Wiseman's such a young guy that he viewed Shaq as kind of this, you know, the lumbering big man we saw with the Lakers. He forgot, and you know this, Dan, in the 1990s, Shaq ran the floor. Shaq was one of the most athletic big men in the NBA. And I think Wiseman's got a little bit of that in him, a little bit of the ability to dominate and run the open floor.
What about my guy from Israel?
No, now you're getting too deep in the weeds for me there, Dan,
Denny,
at this point.
Denny Avdija? No, Adija?
I'm not even touching that.
You don't
I'm
even
not
know.
Even going.
This
I know who he is, but I don't know enough to.
God, he looks he looks great. Denny Adija.
I hope we're rolling on this stuff too, not just my.
Oh no, you know. I've already said it before this.
Okay, all right.
Yeah,
because
but he looks.
He could wind up being Nicholas Skidishvili for all we know at this point. Like, what if, you know?
Nicholas Skidishvili was just a tall guy. That was it. That was it.
Then he can be Dragon Bender or Mario Hezonja or Rafael Arroyo or any of the other international imports.
Or Dante Exum.
Dante Exum had injury issues. That's why Dante Exum didn't pan out.
My
I should say, hold on. I should say hasn't panned out. Still a long way to go for Dante Exum. Big opportunity in Cleveland this year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're talking about him. Hey, thank you, Chris. I appreciate your time as always.
You got it, Dan.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. I mentioned earlier in the show, my college football source told me that when Nebraska found out Wisconsin could not get their team ready due to COVID to travel to Lincoln, Nebraska, Nebraska was on the phone yesterday morning trying to find an opponent for this weekend. Didn't hear anything yesterday, but I've heard something today, and it's being reported the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, and Nebraska close to finalizing an agreement to play this Saturday in Lincoln, Nebraska. The Chattanooga Times Free Press has learned through multiple sources the Cornhuskers game against Wisconsin canceled earlier this week. The game is awaiting approval from the Big Ten Conference, which had previously set an 8-game conference only schedule this fall. And keep in mind, when all of this was going on, when Nebraska was going to go rogue, and if the Big Ten wasn't playing, then Nebraska was going to secede from the Big Ten, at least for a season. And they got spanked by the Big Ten. When they got back together and they decided, okay, Nebraska, you want to play football, you start your season going to Ohio State. I was told that they did that on purpose to punish Nebraska. Now, Nebraska is trying to play a game. They need Big Ten approval, and I can't imagine they're going to get Big Ten approval for this weekend. Paulie?
Dan, we have an update, and you know how much you and I love UT Chattanooga Mocs football. Not good news. According to Adam Rittenberg of ESPN, he's a college football writer, the Big Ten has denied Nebraska's attempt to replace its canceled game against Wisconsin with FCS team UT Chattanooga, sources tell them. Chattanooga had already tested staff and players Wednesday and came back negative, but the game will not happen, according to ESPN's college football reporter.
I don't know why Nebraska doesn't go through the Big Ten first to save embarrassment. Because if I know that you're trying to schedule a game through my source, I'm going to guess the Big Ten's going, wait a minute, are they doing this behind our back? It's one of those, hey, you know, we would rather beg for forgiveness than ask for permission. Why wouldn't you just say to the Big Ten, is it okay if we schedule a game? Yeah, Paulie.
And UT Chattanooga football had planned on playing a spring schedule, but that allowed them to practice, and they were going to run up to Lincoln, handle some business, and come back to Chattanooga. And it looks like they're denied. They were also, it appears that they were going to be paid $250,000 to go to Lincoln, plus travel costs. So that would have been a big boost for their athletic department.
Yeah. Why don't you just call? Why don't you just ask the Big Ten, can we do this?
My weekend's ruined.
Well, I would like to have watched it, but it just, I don't know. I don't know why these schools don't go, you know what, maybe we should ask for, Nebraska, look, if you don't want to be in the Big Ten, then don't be in the Big Ten, and the Big Ten will not miss you. But it's not like Tom Osborne's walking through that door, or I Am Hip, or Mike Rozier, or Johnny Rogers. Ask for permission. Yes, Todd.
You have to have a Chattanooga with the appropriate parties, or these are the things that are going to happen.
See what you did.
And everybody's going to be let down and bummed.
Well, solid at improving, Todd.
Solid.
Yes, you will. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com, or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app. He's a 2-time World Series champ with the Reds and a 2-time National League MVP. He's a Hall of Famer, the greatest catcher ever, Johnny Bench, joining us on the program. And Johnny is going to be auctioning off his personal collection of Hall of Fame items, and he's auctioning off everything but his Hall of Fame ring. He'll be using the auction proceeds to help his 3 young sons with their education. Hunt auctions.com for more information. Johnny joins us now. What should I buy, Johnny? Ooh. Okay.
No, I mean, I like everything is going. I mean, this is the Legends ring. Let's see.
Okay.
I got this one. There we go.
Okay.
That's a Legends ring. Living legend.
All right.
When I die, you can have this. this Hall of Fame ring. And the Bob Uecker bobblehead.
The Harry Doyle bobblehead.
Harry had signed by Harry Doyle himself.
Now that's off limits.
That totally. Are you serious? Would you sell any of your stuff right there in front of you?
No, I would not. No, I would not. Why now?
I don't know. We've been trying to plan and everything else. I've got 14-year-old and 11-year-old sons. Sooner or later, college is going to be coming up. They're going to be wanting to be going to certain colleges, and certain opportunities are going to come to them. And, you know, I got my oldest son through Boston University at in a great expense. And I made $2.2 million in my entire career. So, you know, that that's about 2 weeks worth of work now in the major league. And I you know, you need the money to do it, and you want them the best for them. And so many people tell stories about, and I know Bob Gibson was talking about his, at one time, his family was arguing over who got what, who got, I want that, no, I want this. And then I've had just friends of mine call and said, I can tell you the drama that goes on at when somebody tries to divide something up, whether it be antiques, whether it be art, whether it be a, no, mom wanted me to have that. And then I've had families that are destroyed. They're, you know, they're separated, they're do it, but I want them to have a great opportunity. And let's face it, where are all this? You know, some of it's been in the museum in Binger, and, but a lot of it's in boxes and safe deposit boxes. And it's a good opportunity for me. We've been exploring it for a while. It's been a thought, and I think it's going to be a great opportunity to provide them with a future.
What will be the toughest item to part with?
Well, some of those I've kept. I mean, you know, I mean, like my Larry Bird basketball, you know, signed to me, you know, Larry Bird, same birthday, same date. No, I guess probably the MVP trophies. The MVP trophies. And I got a Sauter Harrell old bat. Do you have any of those?
No, I do not.
I have the only bat, I believe, I'm pretty sure, in existence, signed by the All Century team, that is in my possession. So I, you know, it's the rings, it's the Hall of Fame plaques and stuff. Kept my Thurman Munson Award. I kept my Hutch Award. I wanted, because you know, they mean a lot, and I didn't want to put them in there. And it, there's a lot of great stuff in there. But you know, how do you always pick? But the boys' decision was they didn't argue over the rings. They weren't really worried about it, and so. This is a better opportunity for me. And it seems like in a down year that it might not be the best time, but you know, auctions have done well and people are interested. I saw the Vin Scully auction. I don't know if you did.
But yeah.
Vin Scully auction was huge. And a lot of people out there would like to have something. And I had friends call and said, they're bidding on stuff that I never even thought, you know, would even consider that. So
how much is a gold glove going to cost me?
Depends on the year. Strangely enough, the year I guess coincides with if I won an MVP or I was rookie of the year or something, somebody, that's what they're saying. It's probably going to cost you anywhere from 25 to 50, which is, you know, a couple days work.
That is.
Well, but now that the Peacock has come along.
Yes, that's true. There's also, the painting by Leroy Neiman.
Yes.
Famous, yes. Leroy Neiman painting there.
I think there's a reserve on that at 50.
50K?
And you have quite a collection of Leroy Neiman's from what I hear.
I have a couple of them in here. Yeah, absolutely. But they're nudes of me.
Hey, how about an even trade?
I'll give you a nude Leroy Neiman for the Leroy Neiman of you. All right, it's fair.
I don't need a nude Leroy Neiman of him.
Oh, no, it's me. It's me, Leroy Neiman.
Without the Danettes, right?
No, they're not. They're not involved in it. But if I walk into your house, how long does it take before I realize what you do for a living?
This is the office that my son put together.
Okay, there's a lot of stuff.
So I mean, you know, I do a lot of stuff with Hope for the Warriors. I do some charity work, obviously. Here's a cool thing, Bob Hope. When I went with him, and then the Airborne. This is pretty cool. This is a roast, the Johnny Bench roast. Bob Hope was the MC. That's all we could get that day. The All Century team. How about this one? Now, this is really cool. My assistant got this signed for me. I hope it's not a reflection. But this is me on the steps of Cooperstown, right outside the back.
Yeah.
There's all of the Hall of Famers in attendance, and my assistant got them all to sign it.
How many Hall of Famers you got there?
I'm going to say 35 to 40.
Who was the best storyteller when you guys got together at the Hall of Fame?
You know, strangely enough, I'd love to listen to George Brett.
He's one of my favorite people. He's one of my favorite people.
George is a stud, man, and he always laughs when he tells the story, but he remembers it. He's so, you know him. I mean, yes. Yeah, that's good. But it's so vivid, you know, and everything's still in where they did it. And, you know, different people see things in different ways. They never, you see this and they see it differently, and they pull it out and they stretch it out and everything else. I mean, there was nothing like doing that. Now, I love this, you know, strangely enough, I don't know if it's strange, Gaylord Perry sits in the lobby of the Otisaga Hotel, and I sit there and listen to the stories and just roar, because he, you know, the things that he does and the positions and everything else, it's really cool, you know. And fun is the new guys, you know, Pedro Martinez and the Big Hurt, man, there's some fun stuff. And I'm going to need a lot of fun coming up after the past, but as past a few
did
weeks.
You care if a pitcher was loading up a pitch? Like Gaylord Perry threw a spitball. You know, Nolan Ryan is alleged to have cut the ball, or, you know, somebody would doctor the ball.
What?
Did you care if a pitcher was doing that?
Well, I would just say, so if I knew he had it loaded, I would look for it. And then I could, then if I waited for the drop to hit it. But I don't know if you ever told you a story about Jim Maloney was decided he was going to load him up. He said, John, we're going to load him up. I think I'm going to load some up. Because this is when Phil Regan and Gaylord were, you know, loading him up. He said, I think we better have a sign. I said, you throw it, I'll catch it. Well, two strikes, two outs, first in the first inning. He throws one. I don't touch it. Hits me right on top of the toe. Second inning, two outs, two strikes. He throws it again, hits me on top of the shin guard and bounces back to him. And I walked out and I said, we're going to have a signal. I never took my eyes off of him again, ever.
How do you load it up, though? How do you load it up?
Well, it's just a little Vaseline behind the ear.
Okay.
You know, Gaylord used to do, when they told him he couldn't do it anymore, he would take his thumb on his brow up here. And so he never looked, no, he didn't touch his fingers. He just loaded it right there. And then when he put it back down, he just put his fingers on it, right here. So I never took my eyes off it. We're in Forbes Field. And somebody in the dugout, the manager, hollered at me, and I looked in the dugout, and then I thought, oh, did he load? Did he give me the sign? He threw this thing. It started here, and it dropped so hard, I barely caught leather on it right there, hit me in the cup, broke it in seven places, and that was the last time, needless to say, that he ever loaded it up. So
he's Johnny Bench. You can check out all the auction items from his Hall of Fame career. It you can see everything on display at huntauctions.com for information. I did think about you the other night when I'm watching the World Series and when Kevin Cash goes out to take out Blake Snell, and I wondered what role the catcher can play there. Now, you were established. You were one of the better players, best players in the game. Do you think the catcher could have played a role to say, look, he's still got bite, he's got velocity, these guys aren't catching up to anything? Because he went out with the predetermined, all right, you gave up a hit, Mookie's up, I'm taking you out. Like, there was no wiggle room there.
Yeah, that was the matchup, and that was the hardest thing to describe, but it was Mookie. Any other player, any other batter, I don't think he takes him out. I think the analytics are so big a part of this game right now that that's a commitment to do it, but it has to be a thing. And some managers like Sparky never wanted the pitcher to lose a game. They never wanted him to be the losing pitcher if he pitched that well. I had such a rapport with Sparky that I would look over in the dugout, and he knew when I looked at him that he needed to get somebody warmed up. I would come in off the field and I said, get somebody up, and we could do that. I think there's the analytics are there, and it's buried in the game now. It's embedded, and I think it's going to do it. And, you know, Mr. Cash is going to, you know, listen to it like every manager, and everybody's going to second guess. But it was Mookie. I mean, let's face it. I mean, any other batter probably in baseball at this time, they probably wouldn't have taken him out. But it was a situation where everything dictated. My dictation would have been, if I were catching, is that I will pitch around Mookie. Because they've gotten him out. They struck him out a couple of times, and they got him to ground balls and a couple of things. I would have pitched around him and hoped that Mookie, being anxious in that situation, now he's got a great eye, but you try to get them to chase a pitch that they normally wouldn't go after. And I thought it was a tough decision. Snell didn't want to come out. I mean, he had him. He was at where he wanted to be. And that was a decision that sometime the organization makes by making analytics the most important thing.
Before I let you go, I know it's been a tough couple of weeks. You lost Joe Morgan. And you know, I'm trying to capture Joe Morgan to let a, you know, a new generation know just how special he was, because he did everything. And you don't see a guy that size who is, you know, power hitter. He was a Gold Glove winner, two-time MVP, the spark for that team. And if you do, you have a favorite story of Joe?
The thing about Joe was his favorite player was Nellie Fox. So he's 5'7", 5'7", and Nellie became a mentor of his actually when he went to Houston. And Joe, how about this stat? 4 years, four seasons, Joe Morgan had 50 or more extra base hits, 50 stolen bases, and 100 base on balls. Four seasons.
Wow.
In the history of baseball, no one has ever done it one season. You know,
wow.
He was the kind of guy, and if an infielder ever, no infielder is supposed to talk to the pitcher. Nothing. They didn't know what to say, didn't know what to do. But if Joe Morgan came in from second base to talk to the pitcher, I stayed behind the plate.
Wow.
Because, I mean, we seem to be on the same vibe. I mean, I think sometimes we were just, you know, brothers at one time in our lives in spiritual and mental. And he knew the game. He understood I knew the game. And I mean, he was the best player I ever saw. I mean, like you said, how can you be a Gold Glove, steal bases, hit home runs? If there were games on the line, take the Red Sox, 1975. Who do you want at the plate? Joe Morgan. Who got the base hit? Joe Morgan. And as I told his wife, you know, I said, Teresa, I said, you know, we are so fortunate to have had him in our lives. You know, some people never get to experience the greatness and the friendship and the love that people can have for each other. So, yeah, it's been tough. I'm telling you, Joe, you know, Joe, Tom, and all the others. Now, Kaline was such a dear man. I mean, so I appreciate you. They had me, give me an opportunity to talk about him, man. He was the heart and soul.
And I try to tell people, you know, Bob Gibson, like, I was nervous and I was just watching a game when he would be on the mound. I can't imagine what it was like to face Gibson. Al Kaline is one of the true gentlemen in life, not in just baseball. I mean, we'd lost, you know, some great people, not just great players.
Yeah. Lou Brock, I came into St. Louis. He had 32 stolen bases in a row, and we had Jack Fisher pitching. We call him Fat Jack Fisher because he had a belly, and he'd rest his glove on it. He'd rest his glove right here, and he was pretty quick on plate. Well, Lou took off the steal, and I threw it down, and Lou hadn't got to the cutout. He hadn't even started to slide. He hadn't even got to the dirt. And, you know, after the game, I'm sitting in my locker, one of those shopping carts pull up in front of my locker. Well, that's where we put our dirty and sweats and everything else. And one rule was you never fraternize. It cost us $50 if we talked to another player. Dave Bristol was just so adamant about you not fraternizing. Well, this cart's still sitting there, and I look up. It's Lou Brock. He's in uniform in our locker room, and I'm next to the manager's office. He looked down at me and he said, "Next time, kid, make it look close." And strolled on out. Like it was just a normal routine thing.
That's great. So the auction, huntauctions.com, all the great stuff that Johnny has available for everybody. And that'll be November 14th. November 14th at huntauctions.com. Great to see you. And
yeah, it's going to be live in Louisville, Kentucky at the Louisville Slugger Museum, of where I'm a living legend.
Of course you are.
Yeah.
Just don't die, because then you're no longer a living legend.
I hadn't thought of that. Although I am standing over here with Mays, Koufax, and Aaron as the living legend, so that's pretty good.
How often did you face Koufax?
Never. He retired in 66.
And your first year was 68?
I came up the end of 67.
67.
Yeah, when I was 19.
Well, lucky for you, you didn't have to face Koufax.
Oh, I owned him.
You would have, right? You would have, I'm sure.
Right.
Thank you, bud.
All right, Bill.
That's Johnny Bench, Hall of Famer. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app.